Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Jamal Ahmed in the Soul of Jazz. I'm very honored right now to have a true legend join me by way of phone. Of course, he's up there in Canada, but of course he hails out of the UK, and he is no stranger to your record collection. You may know many of the songs that he's produced, he's arranged, he's composed. He's also an educator and a meditator, member of the legendary Soul to Soul crew, and did so much production with the likes of Lucky Dube, Guru's Jazzmatazz, and he has a new film coming out that's actually out right now. Let me correct myself. A film out right now that's about music's role in caring for people living with dementia. I want to welcome the Funky Ginger, Mr. Simon Law. How you doing, Simon?
I'm very good, Jamal. It's lovely to talk to you, man.
Wow. It is an honor to be talking to you right now, Simon, because like I said, I've been very familiar with your name. Your name has been synonymous with a lot of the records that occupy my collection. So it's good to know that the person behind that name is a good dude.
Very important. Well, we try.
We all do, don't we?
So, we try. We're at the coalface, man.
This is true. So, Simon, let me talk to you, man, first and foremost, because I did not know that you spent part of your childhood in Trinidad in the 1960s. And that's very interesting because there's this very wonderful kind of connection between the UK and the Caribbean, especially post-1945. But talk about growing up in Trinidad and coming up in the Caribbean, because it had to be incredible.
Yeah, I think as I've grown older, I appreciate, you know, how important that formative time. We came back, we went out there when I was 2 years old. My dad was an Anglican minister. He had a church, St. Thomas's in Chaguanas, which is in central Trinidad. And it's, and we, you know, we were there until 60, we came back in 67. And I was 7 years old, and so very formative time. And I think, you know, I just remember this extraordinary vibrant culture that we lived in. You know, the pan music. My mum ran a steel band, actually rehearsed under our house, and you know. I mean, everybody loves the Caribbean, right? It's just the most glorious part of the world. But I don't know, when I visit back there, my good friend Jazzy B has a place in Antigua. I've gone there many times. Gone to Jamaica, worked in Jamaica many times. Gone back to Trinidad. I feel a lovely sort of sense of belonging, in a sense, you know, and just feeling a kindred spirit with the culture and the music of that part of the world, which has given the rest of the world so much. Mm-hmm. You know, such a powerful culture and powerful music that's come from that part of the world. If you think about, you know, soca, you think about reggae, you think about salsa, and you know, and many other forms of music that have come from the West Indies. It's an extraordinary place. And so, yeah, I somehow, you know, as a little white dude growing up there, I think some of that stuff just, you know, when you're a kid, we all know this, we just sponge up stuff, don't we? We're sponges. We grow up, you know, in the where we find ourselves. And and I feel as I grow older, I feel so much gratitude for that time of my life, you know. For sure.
You know, and it's interesting that you say all of that, Simon, and that you were a sponge, and that we're all sponges. But you were really picking up a lot of that culture, because when you think about that musical phase in your life where you were working with Soul to Soul and doing things with Jazzy B and that crew. You know, when you think about that sound of Soul to Soul and UK Soul, you have to think about the Caribbean. You know, when I listen
to
the bass lines of Soul to Soul or Loose Ends or whoever, Omar even, I hear the Caribbean. I hear reggae bass lines. I hear
really so much. Yeah,
but it's a fusion of different things. You guys were fusing so many different things. So I want to kind of jump to that part in your life where you met Jazzy B, and you were hanging out at Soul to Soul's legendary Sunday night session, Africa Center. And I remember hearing that, Africa Center of the World, on those
Africa
classic.
Africa Center of the World.
Exactly. And never knew what it was. Didn't know that it was actually a venue that served as the hub for Soul to Soul. Kind of start at the beginning. How did you all meet? How did you become a part of that wonderful organization?
Well, I mean, I Jazzy and those guys, Dade, H, and Q, they all had been together for a long time prior to doing that. I think originally starting off at high school age and getting together a sound system and putting on parties and raves and whatever through the 80s. And just gaining, slowly building this name and this sort of mystique and this best place to go if you want to hear really amazing music, the best dancers, you know, just at all with this extraordinary powerful kind of vibe. I don't know, as a young guy in 80s London, interested in black music and interested, loving black music, just sort of wanting to be involved. You know, of course, anybody would go and check out Soul's clubs, wherever they were playing, whatever they were doing. And somehow they managed to put on this night eventually in Covent Garden in central London, Africa Center. And it was a small venue, really. I don't know what the capacity was, but every Sunday night it was rammed and there was a crowd double the size outside waiting to get in.
Let me ask you real quick, Simon, what type of records were being played on that night?
So Jamal, that's the key. Like, you know, there you would hear early house music, all the hip hop of that time. So a lot of Public Enemy, Schoolie D, Tribe Called Quest, you know, all the stuff from the, and this we're talking here around 86, 87, maybe even 85. I don't know when Africa Center Club started. It may have been end of 85, certainly through 86. 87 is when we made Keep On Moving and started making music together. But, you know, I was just in that scene, and I loved the club culture of London at that time. There was also a very important scene called... another kind of music you heard a lot of was a lot of rare groove, 70s funk, rare funk. It was called rare groove because guys were just... you know, going to America and digging out, going to shops and obscure shops and finding whatever they could find, you know, and bringing it back. And there was such a vibe for that music. And that was like an education to me because I'd only heard the really big hit singles of that kind of genre, you know. But to hear all these lovely, amazing, rare 45s being played loud in a club right next to something straight out of Detroit right now, straight out of Chicago, house music, Tent City, those kind of people. And then right next to, you know, that early hip-hop, second generation hip-hop, I guess you'd call it, not right at the start, but the late 80s. And then reggae, there would be reggae tunes. And then you'd get people, Norman Jay was a great DJ, and he would often be a guest at Jazzy's Soul to Soul Club, and you know, he would be a master at just dropping kind of some weird pop tune that was out at the moment, and he just made it fit in. Just, I mean, the vibes in that place were just insane, and it was all about dancing. Jazzy's famous line was, he'd say this every night several times, yeah, and if you're not dancing, f*** off. You might not be able to put that on the radio, but he said it in his inimitable deep baritone.
Yeah, that is crowd. That is classic British energy right there, man. If I ever heard it.
So
I want to ask you, Simon, because that is so rich right there, and I think that is it has a lot to do with the foundation of that new wave, because you know you had a wave of UK jazz and funk and soul that came out in the late 70s with the likes of Real Thing and Light of the World and all those bands, yes, that were coming out. Even Incognito, yes, was part of that. Freeze.
Yeah.
Bands like
that.
High Tension. All of that, yep, stuff, man. Central Line. I mean, there's so many, yep, groups that came from that era. But Soul to Soul represented a new pivot in that particular era. And all the records that you were talking about and all those influences you heard in the music of Soul to Soul. But I have to ask you, because, you know, me hearing Keep On Moving for the very first time as a 14-year-old here in Atlanta was a very, very powerful moment, because it was like hearing something that was old and new at the same time. I cannot put into words what that feeling was, but it was absolutely amazing. Want to ask you about that particular song and even Back to Life, because those songs were, first of all, you won Grammys off of those records, and they went, mm-hmm, platinum and sold a lot of records, and put you guys on this world stage. But talk, yeah, about those particular records, because they also embodied a spirit of optimism that, yeah, we had not seen in a long time in black music.
Yeah, I think, you know, I often sort of ponder this, really. It's like, But I think I go back to the Africa Center, really, and what that place embodied, and what you saw coming to a real fruition there was this beautiful vibe of music, people coming together, really coming there to come together as one. Every race under the sun would be crammed into the Africa Center. Let me tell you. You know, just everyone was in there. You get a snapshot of the whole of London. In fact, the whole of the world in there, dancing to the best, funkiest music. And so, and all of the people who came to be involved with Jazzy and those guys, Karen, I'm talking about Karen, Nelly, me, Rose Windross, who sang Fair Play. We were all going down there to dance. We love this music so much that we would go, first of all, going down there to have a really good night. And you know, there was this beautiful spirit in the air of sort of courage, of strength, of celebration. And you know, Jazzy's phrase, the thumping bass for a loving race, you know, it wasn't like some big master plan that was crafted. It was actually just in the air. I don't know how to explain it. Like, you know, I don't think anybody sat down at the desk and plotted this thing out. Then no way. It was like this natural thing that grew in the most beautiful organic way, and which often is the, you know, it's the way good art is created, really. You know, it just grows somehow in fertile soil, and I think that was very fertile soil. So you know, it was very natural expression. What we all were all coming up with and bringing our talents to was very natural and not controlled or contrived. It was just this blossoming of stuff, you know, and it was in the air. And we were surprised when we thought it was good, and we thought, yeah, we're going to do well in London. It'll be good here. But then, you know, it just went ballistic and went global. So, yeah, you know, it just shows really that if you're really true to yourself and you're really honoring the past and bringing your new fresh vibes to the present, you know, you create something really, you have a good chance of creating something really special.
Yeah, yeah. And you can hear it. You can totally hear all of that energy in that first song that we heard, you know, because Fair Play, of course, was the kind of one that a lot of people in the UK first heard.
Yes, that was their first tune, and I wasn't involved in that. I remember I was releasing 12-inch records at that point on my own and taking them around, giving them to DJs. And of course, Jazzy would be my number one guy. Him and Norm J really were the two guys. You've got to get your to them, you know. And so one time I went up to him and I said, you know, we're just doing this. And that's really the reason why we got together, was that he started playing our 12-inch with my sister Joanna Law and me. We had a group called City Heat, and we put out a tune called City Heat, and it was got signed to Chrysalis Records. But he started playing it in the Africa Center, and to me, like, that was it. That was great for me. I'm done now. This is all I have. You know, I can rest easy now. But little did I know, it was the start of a massive journey and a huge, you know, a career that spans up to now. So, you know, like. You know, just the joy of music, man. It just opens things up, opens doors, opens whole new pathways. You know, that if you're brave enough and courageous to follow, who knows where it'll take you. You know,
exactly. I mean, speaking of where this music took you, Simon Law. After all of that, after working with Soul to Soul, you went on to work with a lot of different people. A lot of names that folk know, from the likes of Maxi Priest, Shantae Moore, Shabba Ranks, Johnny Gill, JT Taylor of Kool & the Gang, and Guru's Jazzmatazz. And matter of fact, you did some work with one of my favorite reggae stars out of Africa, Lucky Dube. And you also did work with one of my just huge musical loves, being the great Maurice White of Earth, Wind, and Fire. So you have, I mean, and that part of your career, we could just talk for days and days about that particular aspect of your career. But I want to kind of jump to now, Simon, because you've actually done two really important projects that are very, very vital in this age, especially in this age of COVID and what people are dealing with right now. One that I supported actually was a project that was all centered around mindfulness and meditation, called Mantra Music Meditation. That I am truly invested in, because I do believe in the power of mindfulness and how it can actually change your life. And if everyone just took a little moment to be more mindful, this world would be a different place. But that's just my opinion. You know, but
well, I agree. Jamal, I agree with your opinion. I think it's very true. One of the people I've listened to a lot and learned a lot from is Deepak Chopra, and he often talks about the idea of why meditation and mindfulness is not taught to children, you know, because actually, you know, the ability to sit quietly and just and quieten your mind and just be at peace, what a wonderful thing to teach somebody, you know, when they're growing up, so that it becomes part of their life. I mean, I've come to it much later in life, but you know, so yeah, I think it does have, and I think many people have probably you know, also aided by this pandemic that we're in the middle of, looking for ways to change your life a bit, to sort of find some peace and some strength and inner courage, you know. And the thing is that it all lies there within us all the time. We just have to sort of slow down and stop, and you could discover it. It's inside every one of us, you know.
Right.
I'm grateful that you've mentioned that project. It's something that I'm going to be developing over, well, for the foreseeable future. And I've discovered, you know, a way that sounds a bit grand. I've sort of evolved a way of working on that music that is, you know, I it's not for everybody, but I get very inspired by the Sanskrit mantras, which are very ancient, 5,000, 6,000 year old mantras from India. And they're typically repeated, you know, and but they're very musical often. They're a vibration that, if you repeat, even if you just repeat in your mind, they can really help you sort of focus and become part of the oneness. And so I get very inspired by those musically, and I'm finding that I just sort of do a bit of that every morning before I do any other music. And it becomes a sort of a meditative sort of exercise in itself as well, you know. And so slowly, steadily, I will be putting some of that music out. There's a couple of songs there on Bandcamp now, but it'll be ongoing. And I find that to be making a lot of sense to me in these present times, to be engaged in that kind of work. Yeah,
it is important. It's important to keep that mind calm in the midst of the storm. So I really appreciate you personally for that one, but I also appreciate you for this project that is out right now, that you've dedicated yourself to, a film entitled Music is Life, and it is about music's role in caring for people living with dementia. I actually saw part of the film. I need to watch the entire film, but it was so powerful, Simon, to see what music was doing for these people who were affected by this illness that still has no cure. To give people therapy, to give people hope in the midst of that is truly powerful. Talk about this project and why you chose to embark on something like this.
I think the primary sort of motivation was my father had dementia for many years, a very, very long kind of journey with dementia, 18 years. And he passed on a couple of years ago and, you know, went from being this incredibly vibrant, very smart guy. He was, went to Oxford University, studied law there, and then, as he would say, he got the call and he became a minister. But he you know, was a very gentle, kind man and very able man. And then, you know, things started to fray at the edges and he started to lose his memory and get confused about things. And then it just progressed and progressed. And Mum, you know, was his caregiver for very, very many years until finally it became too much for her to manage at home on her own. And he went into a home and then he was there for about 5 years and then finally passed on. But I was so fascinated, really, and intrigued how music, still when he could no longer recognize any of us or string even a sentence together, you could play some music to Dad that he'd liked, and that might be old church music, it might be Bach. He loved classical music particularly, but he loved calypso music too, so you'd play some calypso. This stuff would just, you'd see in his face and his expression how it connected you immediately to him when language, conventional language, was gone. And so, you know, a lot of research has shown that our appreciation or our kind of connection to music does not involve regular cognitive thought. There's something way deeper than that, and it's often one of the very last things to go when someone has dementia, Alzheimer's. So this always really fascinated me, and then really out of the blue. But I mean, is it out of the blue? It's synchronicity. It's the way the universe works. An opportunity came my way to work in this field, and a new place here was starting up in Toronto called the Dr. Vitor Wellness Academy, and it was started by a family who wanted to put their wealth to good use, and they started this place, which was, the philosophy was that of relational caring. So let me just explain that briefly. Relational caring is it's not really using the arts as therapy. It's more like using, tapping into the arts as a way to build relationships and connection and community. And nothing does that better than music. And it's kind of like, you know, we know this kind of, it's one of those things where you kind of know it in your heart. Anybody who loves music or makes music or whatever, you kind of know that, yeah, it just totally connects you. But thing is, it's so powerful. It's way more powerful than you can even imagine how that works. And especially folks whose memory is disintegrating and their neural pathways are really getting kind of scattered and messed up. The thing is, there's still plenty of the brain which is working okay, and you can tap into that through music or the arts. And what happens is just quite remarkable. I mean, miraculous, really. We would experience miracles pretty much daily there, you know. At the moment, the place is not open because of COVID. But, you know, the film is a really good testament to what we were working at there. And we're developing now a new sort of way to do some of that online. And hopefully when this pandemic is over and there's some sort of cure or vaccine or whatever it is, you know, we will be able to start up in person again. But the remarkable thing is music is more powerful than I think many of us really appreciate. You know, and you referred to Maurice a little while earlier. Now, Maurice White was a guy who knew this, I think, and he really embodied it in their music. And he would often talk about his plan for that band was to make music as medicine.
Earth, Wind and Fire.
Earth, Wind and Fire. And, you know, that it was his, he felt compelled to do that. And that's what the idea behind even right at the start of that band was. And so I think somehow in this film and in this work, in this field of music and dementia, many elements of my life have kind of come together and really make much more sense. Because sometimes, I mean, you know, the music business can be crazy making.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, you know, like... We've got this beautiful art that we've created, and now what? Oh God, what's happening now? You know, but it's like here, I say it in the film, you know, like you sort of see really up close how important music, and I would say wider than music, the arts are, you know, for human beings to connect with one another.
Right.
So that you join in this oneness that binds us all together, and the project just it's ongoing, but the project is very, very dear to my heart, and I hope to encourage many, many more people, musicians, music business people, to really kind of appreciate how what we have at our fingertips, you know, has such a role to play much further than just the music business or whatever,
right?
Or making records or whatever. It actually has this incredible wide purpose that we should kind of tap into, and it's so valuable to humanity, you know.
Well, I think you're tapping into music's original purpose.
Indeed.
What music was placed on this earth for. So I really appreciate all that you have done, and I mean that with everything that you've touched, Simon, from your classic recordings from the late 80s all the way to now, with Mantra Music Meditation, and even the film Music is Life. We greatly appreciate you for what you do, not only for the world of music lovers, but for the world in general. So if people want to find out more information about you, Simon Law, how can they do so?
If you go to funkyginger.com, that's my website. You can find that on Facebook as well. There's a Funky Ginger page on Facebook. There's a Funky Ginger Instagram, which is a little bit more goofy, but you know, it's kind of there's stuff there too. You can track me down in all the usual places.
Okay, and we also have to talk about your production album that you put out a few years ago. That we were supporting here at WCLK.
You did, man, and I'm very grateful for all your support.
Well, it was killer. Really. It wasn't just because, hey, man, this is a nice guy. It was a brilliant record done by a legendary producer and songwriter. So I thank you for all that you've done for us, Simon. And, of course, if people want to find out more information about Music is Life, the film, how can they find out more information about that film?
There's a website, musicislifefilm.com.
Okay.
And then all the links are there to you can watch the movie. It's available for all to see on YouTube. And there's lots of other little clips and interesting parts to do with the film and to do with the research, because it was a very much research-backed film as well. Do with this idea of relational caring, a lot of research behind that as well. So and also we did the song that the film is kind of based a little bit around writing. One of the things I love to do is write songs, and I try to bring everything that I've learned in all my years in this work to the table, not dumbing down, not changing it or anything. I bring the computer in, I bring all the recording gear, we do stuff, we write songs together. And we wrote a song called Music Takes You Higher. And the song, actually, we've done a karaoke version. So you can, that's on the website too, you know, that you can sing along to. And that is tried and tested, man. That was written with these folks who are living with dementia. We sung it day in, day out. That's a good tune. It does your soul good to sing it.
Yes, it does. It really does. It really does. It's absolutely beautiful. And I commend you again for this life-saving work, because it really is.
It's
putting more life on individuals who, you know, were counted out. So we do appreciate you for all that. Simon, thank you so much for being the legend that you are, brother, and for taking time out to speak to us here at WCLK.
Jamal, I'm very grateful. Cheers, man.
Always, my friend. You have a good one, okay?
You too.
Peace.